Pogomoller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, the sergeant-at-arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend J. Michael Byron from St. Celia's Catholic Church, and he's a professor of theology at the St. Paul Seminary.
Let us pray. Ever-present God, we give you thanks in this season, teeming with new life, the returning light, for your constancy and goodness to us. Gratefully, we know that we need never doubt your desire to move and to live among us, to share our joys, to help us in our needs. It is we who need regularly to recall our dependence, and so we do so now, O God, asking with confidence that you guide the deliberations of this body on this day with the gift of your wisdom, the clarity of your vision, and a passion to serve the common good of Minnesota. Amen.
Amen.
You're welcome.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebretson, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Corrine, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parasol, Perry, Pogomiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate files. Herewith returned Senate file numbers 2152, 2363, 2572, and 3116, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. The next message is on Senate File 2437, Senator Moi. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments of concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2437, a bill for an act relating to public safety, recodifying and clarifying the domestic abuse no contact order law. Senate File 2437 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House, the Senate File 2437, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Next message is on Senate File 3128, Senator Kielash. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments of concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 3128, a bill for an act relating to residential construction. Senate File 3128 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur with the amendments by the House on Senate File 3128 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate and to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Kielash motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Next message is on Senate File 2944, Senator Thomas Soney. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2944, a bill for an act relating to licensing, modifying contractor continuing education requirements. Senate File 2944 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Thomas Soney.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2944 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Senator Thomas Soney, a brief description of the bill and what was changed when it went to the House.
Mr. President, the bill was the continuing education bill for contractors and the internet continuing education part of the International Distance Education Certification Center was basically restated. It was virtually the same, but just it was done in a little bit different manner, and I don't see much difference in what the House did and what the Senate had, so I urge your support.
Further discussion? Secretary? Oh, excuse me. First, adopt the motion, the Senate concurrence to the amendments by the House to Senate File 2944. And the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Third reading.
Senate File 2944, a bill for an act relating to licensing, modifying contractor continuing education requirements.
Secretary will take the roll.
What's wrong? That's right. Oh, you got the wrong bill.
All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 53 ayes and 10 nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to.
Next message is on Senate File 2935. Senator Lori. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments and concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2935, a bill for an act relating to human services, making changes to licensing provisions. Senate File 2935 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2935 and that the conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with the like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Lori motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Next message is on Senate File 2519, Senator Anderson. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments to concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2519, a bill for an act relating to public utilities. Senate File 2519 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2519 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files, herewith transmitted, House file numbers 1320 and 3056, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
The next order of business is first reading of House bills. They will be referred as indicated, and they are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of House bills. Next order of business, reports of committees. Reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the reports of the committees printed on the agenda be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Sixth order of business is second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. First reading of Senate bills. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Not a motion, okay. Second reading, or first reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are five authors' motions. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. There's a resolution today printed on the agenda. Without objection, the resolution will be sent to the Rules Committee. There's a motion to be read at the desk. Senator Pappas, do you have a motion to be read?
Mr. President, I move that the appointment of Christopher Frederick to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and University, reported in the Journal for February 4th, 2010, be withdrawn from the Committee on Higher Education and placed on the confirmation calendar.
Okay, on that.
Mr. Do you want me to explain this?
Yeah, why don't you better
Mr.
explain.
President, I know this is an unusual motion, but we plan to interview Christopher Frederick. He's the student rep on the MinSCU board. On Tuesday, during our regular committee time, it was our last committee scheduled. I'm hesitant to schedule any other committees this year because our floor sessions seem to run into our committee time. And because we had two major amendments that were offered to Senator Anderson's bill by Senator Bach and Senator Ingebrigtsen, my committee was therefore canceled. Am I a little angry? Yes. So what we did is we had Mr. Frederick come up in the hallway here, and all the members of my committee went out and talked to him and interviewed him in that regard, and we all thought he was great. Separately, yes. And so there was no discussion or no vote taken. The members are going to vote today. So rather than leave him hanging for another year until next session, we would just like to pull him up on the floor and confirm him. That's probably more explanation than you wanted or needed, Mr. President.
All right, a little unusual, but we're going to do it. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. I think he wants to do the Senator,
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, remaining on motions, I move that we take up the Senate calendar.
Okay, on that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Shouldn't have to remind members, but again, there are nine bills here. and there will be a roll call votes taken. The first bill on the Senate calendar is House File 3405. The chief author, Senator Berglund. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 3405, a bill for an act relating to human services, modifying commissioners' duties related to the state medical review team.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and state agreed to. We'll go to number 3 on the calendar. House File 3151, the chief author, Senator Pappas. Third reading.
House File 3151, a bill for an act relating to mortuary science, modifying provisions related to viewing, transporting, and removal of a dead body.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 50 ayes and 13 nays, the bill is passed, its title agreed to. The fourth bill on the calendar, Senate File 2830, the chief author is Senator Chaudhry. Senator Chaudhry, be in your seat, please, when we do this. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2830, a bill for an act relating to natural resources, repealing certain definitions related to natural resources.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 1 nay, the bill is passed, it's still agreed to. Number 5 on the calendar is House File 3157, the chief author, Senator Senjum. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 3157, a bill for an act relating to children, modifying parent notification of child maltreatment in a school facility.
Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed. The state will agree to. Number 6 on the calendar, House File 2879. This is its chief author, Senator Sieben. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 2879, a bill for an act relating to insurance allowing certain minors to contract for automobile insurance.
Secretary will take the roll.
Jimmy.
Thank you. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. The next bill on the calendar is number 7 on the calendar. House File 2907, Senator Pretner Solon. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 2907, a bill for an act relating to communications, setting state goals for the deployment and speed of high-speed broadband.
Secretary will take the roll. Well, all senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. There being 58 ayes, 6 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. The eighth bill on the calendar for today is House File 2624, Senator Anderson's bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 2624, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for environment and natural resources.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 58 ayes, 6 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. The ninth bill on the calendar, Senate File 2752. This is a Senator Saltzman bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2752, a bill for an act relating to natural resources allowing conditional uses of certain lands within the lower St. Croix River area.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. 59 ayes, 4 nays. Bill is passed. It's title agreed to.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, remaining on motions, I'd move that we take up the general orders calendar.
Beyond the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do now resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
Beyond the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to designate the list of looks like 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 or 11 bills here. And I want to note, Mr. President, that Senator Clark would like to go number 65, would like to go before number 74. So just swap 74 and 65. Apparently the seatmates have a preference there. I'd yield to Senator Berglund.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arrive, Senate File 3251 be recommended to pass.
Okay, discussion on your on the bill, Senator Berglund.
Yes, I did explain this bill yesterday, but I will repeat it briefly.
Okay,
today.
brief, smaller.
Right. This is a department bill. It deals with our sex offender program, and it deals with issues in order to anticipate a conditional release. It adds language to create additional options for victim notification. It would allow the department to pick up a client who might need to be revoked without giving them notice. It clarifies that the Minnesota Sex Offender Program is solely responsible for the management, supervision, and aftercare of these individuals. The counties are not responsible. It reestablishes an evidentiary standard for the Supreme Court Appeals Panel, which was altered by a recent case law. And it has some cleanup language in regard to clarifying the differences between the Department of Human Services MIND program and the sex offender program. I'd be ready for questions.
Further discussion? Senator Ortman. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer the A4 amendment.
Secretary will report the Ortman A4 amendment.
Senator Ortman moves to amend Senate File 3251 as follows. Page 3 after line 9, insert. This is Amendment A-4.
Senator Ortman, on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A-4 amendment was brought to us in the Judiciary Committee by the County Attorneys Association. All they asked in the Judiciary Committee was that before one of these directors release someone on a provisional release or a permanent release, that they notify the county attorney in the destination county as well as the releasing county. Right now, the statute is drafted so that the releasing county gets noticed and they have an opportunity to attend any hearings and to watch out for this change in the circumstances in their county. But there is no provision for the county attorney in the destination county, the county with the financial responsibility, to get that notice. And so the A4 is offered at the request of our county attorneys asking for additional notice before we release sex offenders into their community. I think it's a very reasonable thing to do, and I hope the Senate will take a position in favor of that.
Senator Berglund, on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman and members, I rise to oppose this amendment. The amendment does far more than give notice. Notice would be given under the current law. This gives them standing to oppose a pass that might be given to an individual who the court has already determined should be eligible to receive passes and be released into the community under the condition of the pass. Now, who gets standing in court today? The county attorney in the county in which the crime occurred, the sheriff in the county in which the crime occurred, the sheriff in the county in which the person would be out on a pass, but the county attorney in the county in which the person would be getting a pass has no standing and shouldn't have standing. If we allow more people to be intervening in these cases, it makes our law more unconstitutional. This is a therapeutic decision, and it should not be interfered with by people that otherwise would not have any reason to be involved. The only time the county attorney in the county in which a person is being sent would become involved is if some crime happened. And clearly the way the provisional release program is set up, the person would be revoked before a crime would be committed and the individual would not be in the county any longer. So I would urge you to oppose this amendment. We don't need to do things that make our law likely to be found unconstitutional.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I'll ask for a roll call vote on this. I think it's not a hardship to ask that the county attorney of destination be given notice. And when they ask for that, it is for an opportunity to be heard in the proceedings, making the determination about whether these sex offenders should be released. And if it's harder for them to be released, I think everybody here should be okay with that. They're sex offenders. I don't think we want to vote to make it easier for them. I think we want to make sure that the public safety concerns are all addressed. And if our county attorneys say, please give me notice so I can participate in the hearing, I think it's incumbent upon us to give them the notice that they need to do their work. Why would we keep them from knowing about what's happening in their county if public safety requires it? Members, I would say one other thing in behalf of this amendment. The interests of the releasing county are very different than the interests of the receiving county, the destination county. The county attorney up north, who actually committed the person, has a very different interest than, say, the county attorney in Hennepin County, who is going to receive that person. And so we want them to look at it from a different point of view. We want them to have an opportunity to be heard. I don't see why providing notice and the opportunity to be heard should be objectionable to this chamber and this body. I hope we'll do what we can to protect public safety.
Three hands for the roll call. Seeing three hands. Senator M. Olson. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a long discussion about this exact issue in the Judiciary Committee, and it isn't a question of being more or less hard on sex offenders. It's a question of making sure that we honor the law and the Constitution so that we don't put our program in jeopardy. When it comes to safety issues, we notify the sheriff's departments in both locations, and that's appropriate. When it comes to the interest that a county attorney's office would have in relaying the facts related to the underlying crime, which is a legitimate reason for them to have standing in the proceeding, then the originating county attorney is going to have that information, and the county attorney in the location where the person would be going isn't going to have that information. That's why, as Senator Berglund was saying, they don't really have a constitutional reason to have standing, and that's why we were concerned as lawyers that we not jeopardize the program. Thank you.
We're on A4 amendment. Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I was the author of the bill that revised the proceedings to make it easier or revise the process for commitment of sex offenders back in the special session of 1994. And I've expressed concerns over the years that more and more we're passing legislation and laws that kind of carve out this group of individuals and make them look less like patients, which they are, and make them more like they're under the correction system. And every step that we take is one more step towards ultimately having some court somewhere saying that the whole process is unconstitutional. So I've raised this issue before. I'm raising it again. I think we need to be very cautious about these various steps, because this is just one more step where we're differentiating the other commitment clients from this particular group. So be very cautious, and I would oppose the amendment as well.
Senator Berglund.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to repeat, a judge and a 3-judge panel in both situations have found that this person should be able to be given conditional release. The department has decided to give them a pass to let them out for a specific period of time. Maybe it's 2 hours to go visit their mother. It's part of their therapeutic program. If we allow a county attorney in that mother's home county to intervene to keep that person from being able to be released on a pass, we are very close to making this program totally unconstitutional. And so I strongly urge you to oppose this amendment.
Further discussion on the A4 amendment. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Senator Berglund yield for a question?
She will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Berglund, is it my understanding that, and maybe Senator Betzel can answer this as well, can the county attorney from the prosecuting jurisdiction notify the receiving county attorney of this move, of this transfer.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebretson, the county attorney in the receiving county would be notified, but that doesn't give them standing. This amendment gives them standing to go into court and intervene. Now, in the receiving county wants to notify the county attorney in the county in which the crime occurred to intervene on behalf of him in that case, they can do that. But to have more than one county attorney intervening in a case is really getting us to the point where this is, I mean, it would be very easy for a court to find that the legislature is making it impossible for people to ever get out of this program. And I believe that that would make the program unconstitutional.
Further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand this, when you start looking at the money and the budgets that involve this type of protocol regarding treatment, I've been told that 10% of the cost is the burden of a county. And so if they absorb any burden, they should have a little involvement in the game when some of these individuals are being released. I think it's very important for a county attorney to realize this, and I agree with Senator Ortman's amendment. If they didn't, then perhaps it might be a little different discussion. But I would hope that we could keep the attorneys involved. After all, they're the ones that kind of start the thing, aside from the arrest. They're the ones that are involved, and they establish the court action, and then as it evolves, it gets involved into the civil confinement. But nevertheless, the county attorneys are involved in the beginning. There's at least a 10% involvement in the game in all of this, and I think it's only right for them to be involved to the end.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's no additional imposition on the Constitution by notifying two attorneys instead of one. They are both county attorneys, both fully elected. There's no additional imposition on the Constitution members. And the county attorneys testified very persuasively that no, they don't plan on sending two attorneys, but what they will do is cooperate, and then the best suited attorney, the attorney with the highest interests, will represent both. But nobody here would say that a county attorney should not be heard when these decisions are made. And all they're saying is, please make this a little easier for us to watch what's happening in our courts, watch what's happening with these releases, so we aren't taken by surprise. We want to prepare. They have huge caseloads. To notify two attorneys is not any burden for any member in this chamber or for anybody on these panels.
Further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll on the Ortman A4 amendment. All senators haven't voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 38 ayes and 26 nays, the amendment is adopted. Further discussion, Senator Berglund.
I move progress of the bill.
Progress requested, progress granted. The second bill in general orders, number 71 in general orders, Senate File 633, Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 633 be recommended to pass.
Senator Sharon, on the bill.
Thank you very much. This is a bill that really comes about because of the stress that's being placed on the capacity of our systems to provide good dental caries prevention programs for children and teens. With the changes that have been occurring in terms of our ability to refund our dentists for the cost of the services well below what it costs them to provide the service, and also the eligibility requirements to be able to be in these programs, and the general distress we're putting in dental care. Physicians and dentists have come together. They've talked about how they can collaborate in order to be able to improve some of the services for children. And out of that, this bill has been formulated. This bill, by the way, has passed in the Senate before, but it did have a requirement on the physicians, and had a fiscal note associated with it. So this bill now is in front of you without a requirement. It's a recommendation rather than a requirement, so there's not a fiscal note associated with it. And what it does is directs the commissioner to encourage rather than require primary care providers at the time of a child and teen checkup or at an episodic care under MA to perform primary caries prevention services, which would include a visual exam, a risk assessment for certain factors, and applying fluoride varnish beginning at age one to certain high-risk children. It also requires, if these services are provided, that the parent or legal guardian be informed who to contact in the child's managed care plan or Department of Human Services to secure a dental appointment to follow up the primary care physician's interventions. This originally was to be a pilot program, but it's now been expanded, and I'm hoping that you will support this program.
Further discussion on Senate File 633. Seeing none, Senator Sharon renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 633 be recommended pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. I appoint Senator Scogin to chair the committee. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Continuing on general orders, we'll go to number 65, Senate File number 3131. Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is the first of... when the committee to arise. Excuse me for a second. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File, excuse me.
3131
do pass. Excuse me, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Clark moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3131 be recommended to pass. Senator Clark, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. That's what we get for trying to work on many parts of bills at the same time. You may be aware that this week is the week of the young child. It's a very exciting week, and at the end of today, we will be having a resolution that we will talk about. There will also be children visiting us in the gallery very soon. The Senate has done a great job of trying to make sure bipartisanly that we are closing the achievement gap and that we are moving forward in a positive way for all of our all of our earliest learners. This particular bill, this first bill, is making sure that we are continuing our strategically targeted investment and policies and areas and programs to provide the best outcomes for the state's dollars. This particular bill is providing the accountability framework for early child care and education in Minnesota. We have been working with several of the foundations, among others, and this report card will measure the state's progress towards the goal of having all children ready for kindergarten by 2020. It provides annual reports on the progress of all levels of the state's early care and education system, and the information will enable legislators to make better informed decisions about both funding and policy, but frankly also for parents to make better decisions and other funders. It's a great example of public-private partnership. There is no cost to the state. A coalition of the early childhood funders have agreed to provide the funds necessary.
Further discussion on Senate File 3131. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have I'd like to offer the A2 amendment, please.
Secretary will record the A2.
Senator Michelle moves to amend Senate File 3131 as follows. Page 1, after line 5, insert section 1. This is amendment A-2.
Senator Michelle, on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. This is another piece of the Early Childhood Caucus list of priorities for this year. It is also an important part of the package that has been pushed by this group of funders. Mr. President, we've had a discussion of this in both the K-12 and in the State and Local Government Committee. This creates an Office of Early Learning. It's not a new agency. It's not a new commissioner. What we want to do is create a single point within state government that can focus on this issue, that can focus on early childhood education. There are 23 other states, 23 other states that have an office or a department dedicated to early childhood learning. So I'd suggest we're a little behind the curve. And so I think this fits comfortably into today's discussion about early childhood issues. I think it fits easily onto Senator Clark's bill, and I hope she thinks of it as a friendly amendment.
Further discussion on the A2 amendment. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chair. I support the Senator Michelle's amendment. The bill was heard in the most recently in the state and local government bill, and it was passed unanimously, and I think it's an appropriate home for it on Senator Clark's bill.
Further discussion, Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a friendly amendment. This is something that we have been working on together, many of us, for quite a long time. I want to reinforce that we're instructing that the current and existing resources be used. There should be no need for any new positions. We just want to make sure people are actually working together. This is not about moving deck chairs, but this is about having a focused vision.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is not a friendly amendment. Senator Michelle, I have a fiscal note for this of about $500,000, $300,000. How are we going to pay for this amendment?
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cohen, I believe what you have is a fiscal note for an earlier version of this bill. And let me point you to two critical pieces here. Number one is lines 128 and 129. And I'll quote that. It says, the office must rely on existing appropriations and staff for carrying out these duties. So that is certainly my intent as the author of this legislation. This would require no new dollars. The other piece to this that has changed since it went through Senator Rest Committee, Senator Cohen, is the effective date. We've punched this out to being effective July 1 of 2011. And that's to give the departments and agencies involved a little more time to digest this transfer and new assignment. So I hope that's something that you feel comfortable about.
Further discussion on the A2 amendment. Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, appreciate the language. with language like that, whatever the language looks like, we normally ask for the bill to be in finance. So I don't know if Senator Clark has any objection to the bill being returned from the floor to the Finance Committee. But with or without that language, I guess I have some concerns. We normally will hear from the agencies affected as to whether or not they can work with language of that sort. That hasn't been, I don't know if Senator Stumpf's, I don't know if he's on the floor or not. So I don't know what his position is and what he might have heard from the agency. But unless we have some sign-off from the agency, I guess I would have some concerns, language or not.
Senator Michel.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Cohen, I have talked to Senator Stumpf, and my sense was he was comfortable with this. In addition, I have not heard from any of the agencies or departments involved with any. Now, in some ways, Senator Cohen, that doesn't surprise me. Maybe they don't realize that that we're getting pretty serious about this, but I certainly want to work with you, Senator Cohen. So if you're uncomfortable with this, I would withdraw the amendment, but I would stress that language. You know, I don't know how else the legislature can say the office must rely on existing appropriations and staff.
Well,
Senator Cohen, to that point?
I guess what I would ask is I would ask the author then to temporarily progress the bill so that I can make a couple calls and find out, talk to Senator Stumpf and see if it's something we can let go at this point. But I would then ask Senator Clark to progress the bill if this is going to go on.
Further discussion, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have concern on lines 1.21, where it references the Department of Human Services and activities related to child care assistance, child care development, and early childhood learning and child protection facilities. And so I would just offer that I think that there are some fiscal implications to some other divisions as well that would need to be further addressed.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it sounds like there will need to be some further discussion. However, I do want to make sure to be on the record to say that this was one of the highest priorities of the Early Childhood Caucus. There is a group of funders that have been working in the foundation community for several years on behalf of our youngest children, and one of the biggest concerns that we have had over time is the lack of cohesiveness with which we approach public policy in this area. We have a child care system housed in one place. We do school readiness in another. We do home visiting in both. And so while it sounds like this isn't going to go on at this time and there needs to be more work to be done, it is a priority whether or not it happens today or tomorrow. And so I do rise in support of this amendment. Thank you.
Senator Clark, on the A2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I rise to temporarily progress the bill. We would like to see if we can work this out with Senator Cohen, but I will be bringing it back later on today.
Progress requested, progress granted. Members, we move to number 74 on the general orders calendar today. This is going to be Senate file 2505, and the chair recognizes Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, in keeping with our Week of the Young Child, this is the next. I move when this committee do arise, Senate File 2505 be recommended to pass.
Senator Bonhoff has moved that when this committee do arise, the Senate File 2505 be recommended to pass. Senator Bonhoff, on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in keeping with the Week of the Young Child, the next bill that we have before us today, Senate File 2505, reflects the vision of the Early Childhood Caucus's desire to create a statewide quality rating and improvement system across early child care and education programs. This initiative expands our vision by helping providers and programs build quality. This legislation builds on the $1.3 million in ERA funding we directed last session toward training, coaching, consultation, and supports for providers interested in participating in the voluntary QRIS program. So this $500,000 is not new money from the general fund. It represents 5.5% of the total $10.3 million that Minnesota receives in the federal child care development funds. The other funding is used to support the Child Care Resource and Referral Systems, the Child Care Services Grant Programs, as well as for professional development. So this CCDF funding aligns with the QRIS, and it has been recommended to us by several national consultants, including Louise Stoney and Ann Mitchell, who we have been working with, who are experts in this field, that consistent with what other states are doing, that we work to repurpose funds, making sure that we are all in agreement that the direction we are moving in Minnesota is towards a statewide quality rating and improvement system. Lastly, these funds will help providers all over the site, the state. We are not expanding our current pilots for the quality rating and improvement system, the parent-aware pilot sites. Rather, we're making sure that when we are ready to expand QRIS, that our provider community is on board, they've gotten all the information they need, and that we can facilitate a smooth transition towards high quality child care and education for all of our children in Minnesota. Thank you. I stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 2505. Further discussion. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Bonhoeff that Senate File 2505 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Next on our general orders calendar today, members, we have Senate File 3119. The chair recognizes Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3119 be recommended to pass.
Senator Rummel has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3119 be recommended to pass. Senator Rummel, on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 3119 is part of a group of early childhood bills that you've been hearing about. This is the last part. This particular bill deals with the systemic accountability of our early child care initiatives. The bill does two things. First, it adds to the Governor's State Advisory Council on Early Childhood Education and Care a member from the Department of Health, either the commissioner or her designee. And second, it requires the council to make recommendations on how to assess and screen children for school readiness in order to provide early interventions. And members, I would note that the numerous foundations that are behind and supporting these initiatives, not only are they taking up the costs, but they have done the research. And they are confident that if we could move together as a state, move forward as a state on the early childhood education and care initiatives, we will save a great deal to the state, and we will bring children to the classroom ready to learn, and that's something that we are all supporting. Section 2 in particular outlines the key questions that the advisory committee will be asking. Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Senator Rummel?
It's the A2 amendment.
Senator Rummel moves the A2. The secretary will record the amendment.
Senator Rummel moves to amend Senate File 3119 as follows. Page 1, delete Section 2 and insert. This is Amendment A-2.
We have the A2 in front of us, members. Senator Rummel, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment is a technical amendment. While it may look complicated on your monitor, it does two things. It brings the language of this bill in conformity with the standards of our state and local government committee. And secondly, it requires an establishment of an account in special education revenue fund. The foundations will be generating some dollars, and it made sense to all that there be a special fund set aside to address those dollars. With that, I will stand for questions.
Discussion on the A2, Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rummel, I do note that the main report is going to be submitted to the governor and to the legislative committees no later than July 1st of 2012. Now, that's at the end of the biennium. The legislature's already done. Whoever's here to receive it is not are not necessarily going to be the members that are going to be in the legislature after the 2012 elections, because the 2012 elections are going to be in 2012, November 2012, and then you're going to have new members. So you may want to just, but you've got a main report on July 1st, and then interim reports following that. So I'm not quite sure, because the people who received in the legislature the report in July aren't going to be around necessarily in 2013.
Further discussion on the A2. Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair and Senator Betzold, would you want to make a recommendation about how we might change that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, I would suggest that, and you may have to progress your amendment in your bill to do this, but you may want on to page 2, line 27, have the main reports come in. We usually have them come in early January, like January 15th. Now, you've got interim reports, and that's kind of up to you when you want those interim reports, but it seems a little backwards to have the main report coming in to legislators who may not even be in the legislature in 2013. So I think you probably want to have the report coming in on January 15th of 2013. And if you want interim reports after that, you just have to figure out when you want them to come in. So I would suggest you may want to progress it and maybe have your amendment redrafted to take care of that.
Senator Rummel?
Mr. Chair, could we do that as an oral amendment to change the date?
Senator Rummel, do you know what those dates are? Or Senator Rummel seeks advice?
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rummel, if on line 227 you would just change the date to, as suggested by Senator Betzold, to January 15, 2013, the legislature will be in session, and then those interim reports will be coming in next year and the year after that, and then the final report, January 15, 2013. So I would suggest that you incorporate that change into your amendment.
Senator Rummel incorporates it as an amendment to the amendment. Secretary will record the amendment to the amendment.
Senator Rummel moves to amend her amendment to Senate File 3119 as follows. On page 2, line 2.27, delete July 1, 2012, and insert January 15, 2013.
Further discussion on the amendment to the amendment. Further discussion, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Rummel, further discussion on the A2 as amended. Further discussion, seeing none, we have the A2 amendment as amended before us, members. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair and committee members, if you look up into the gallery, a number of the children.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Rummel. We don't recognize the gallery here.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. We now have before us further discussion on Senate File 3119 as amended. Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will Senator Rummel yield for a question?
Senator Rummel will yield. Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you. Senator Rummel, this bill advocates comprehensively assessing children for school readiness. And what does that mean, comprehensively?
Senator Rummel?
Mr. Chair and Senator Vanderbilt, what the bill does is ask the advisory committee to study a number of questions. And so I just put away my papers. So some of the questions are to find ways to interface with parents, and among those are to find definitions for school readiness, define screening, and defines assessment. These are questions that are very complicated, and the advisory committee is going to work on those questions so that when their recommendations come to us, we can answer your question.
Senator Vanderveer.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, how many of the kids in the state are you? Is this intended to assess for school readiness?
Senator Rummel, to that point.
Mr. Chair and Senator Vanderveer, the goal is to screen 50% of the children by 2015, and 100% by 2020, and the goal is to assess 50% of five-year-olds by 2015 and 100% by 2020. But it is necessary to understand that's all voluntary, that it is not mandatory. It's just a goal to set for. That's why one of the key questions that the advisory committee will be addressing is how to interface with not only providers, but parents and communities on the needs for doing these things. But it will always be voluntary. And again, we know the research tells us that the earlier we identify obstacles to learning, the sooner we can correct them to the benefit of both the child and to those of us who pay for education.
Senator Vanderveer.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rummel, parents can opt out of the screening. Is that correct?
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair and Senator Vanderveer, yes.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, one other final question. Where's the money coming from to do this?
Senator Rummel.
The money for this particular bill, which is to do this work of this committee, comes from the foundations that includes United Way, the Blandon Foundation, the Minneapolis Foundation, and a host of other foundations who are part of the cooperative.
Further discussion on Senate File 3119 as amended. Further discussion. Seeing none, Senator Rummel renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3119 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, motion prevails. Members, we move to number 56 on the general orders calendar this afternoon. This is Senate File number 2873, and the chair recognizes Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2873 be recommended to pass.
Senator Fredrickson moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2873 be recommended to pass. Senator Fredrickson, to your bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, Senate File 2873 makes some changes to the Public Facility Authority programs. Just as a way to start the discussion, the Public Facility Authority is six state agency commissioners. First is the Department of Economic Development, and the Department of Economic Development Commissioner chairs the authority. The other commissioners are the commissioners of Ag, Health, Public Pollution Control Agency, Department of Transportation, and the Commissioner of Management and Budget. And they hire an executive director who then administers the programs. In the bill, sections 1 and 16 deal with actually complete reorganization of the Public Facility Authority that began a couple years ago. In section 1, we give more explicit guidance to the executive director and the responsibilities of the executive director in directing the staff. And in section 16, in statute, transfers employees from the deed to the Public Facilities Authority. The Public Facilities Authority will still remain in the Department of Economic Development, but it makes it explicit that these few employees are employed by the Public Facilities Authority. Section 2, we are making some changes to the Clean Water Fund, and that is explicitly to qualify for $37.4 million of new federal monies. A couple of the changes that are being made in that program to comply with the federal program is that $5.35 million of that monies must be in the form of grants, and $7.5 million must be for green infrastructure. And of that $7.5 million, must provide grants of up 25% of projects up to a maximum of $1 million. Section 3 makes changes to the Wastewater Infrastructure Fund. WIF provides grants to lower-income communities so that they can afford to upgrade wastewater treatment systems. The change in eligibility changes from 5% of the market value of property to a figure based on median household income. And the way the bill reads now, we're actually going back to the program as it was a few years ago. Costs that are more than 1.4% above the median household income will qualify for grants of up to 80% of the difference between the 1.4% and the cost of the facilities. Section 6 are technical changes. Section 7, 8, and 9 make changes to the small community wastewater treatment program. It allows more flexibility in technical assistance grants and expands the list of advisors who can make technical assistance to small communities, and also requires that communities have a plan and a schedule of when they will implement the upgrades to their systems, and also allows some upfront granting to communities when the PCA has approved a project, so the PFA can make upfront pre-design and design grants to help the communities with that design design part of the proposals. Sections 11 and 12 dealing with the state drinking water fund, and the changes in this program will qualify the state of Minnesota for $22.8 million in federal funding to our drinking water fund. Makes changes similar to the ones I described earlier in Section 2 for the Clean Water Fund, except that in the drinking water, the program will pay 80% of the funds above 1.2% of the median household income in a community. Would also provide grants to smaller systems in rural areas of the state. Sections 13, 14, and 15 are to the Credit Enhancement Program. The Credit Enhancement Program is to help counties and cities with lower interest rates on their bonds. The program pools general obligation bonds from cities and counties. The PFA then sells revenue bonds from that pool, and the local communities who participate in this program save quite a significant amount of money on their interest expense. There's one program change in the credit enhancement program, and that is that communities will no longer be able to use this program for refinancing of debt obligations. It will only be for new projects, and it raises the limit on the amount of credit enhancement bonds from $500 million to $1 billion. So, Mr. Chairman, that's a description of the bill. I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 2873. The chair recognizes Senator Stumpf.
thank you, Mr. Chairman, I believe. Or is it Mr. Chairman? Would Senator Fredrickson yield?
He will yield.
Senator Fredrickson, when you change the language to a project, and I believe the description is that it's a technical bill, or at least for the most part a technical bill, in the language you use a project, how does that, practically speaking, how does that change the amount on the loan, or doesn't it change the amount on the loan?
Senator Fredrickson, to that point.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, I don't think if I understand your question properly, I don't think it would. Let me start over with this again. If it is to the WIF program and it's affected by the change for the Clean Water Fund from the median income to from the property value to the median household income, I think it would depend on the individual city as to how high their property values were and how high their median household income is, because the operative grant part is 80% of the amount that's above the way the bill now reads, the property values in the community, and we're going to 80% above the median household income in the community. So this will make it more sensitive to the income of the community versus the property values of the community.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, I think what I picked up as I was reading the proposal is the per project, the term per project, and it's new language, I believe. I don't think it actually changes anything. I think it's just the per project just kind of triggered a thought in my mind that what were we funding before? It was a project or the project, but in here it says per project. It may not mean anything in terms of how we do things differently from previously to now, but that was what I was wondering about.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, as I understand your question, I don't think that would make any change. I don't think that has a significant change to how the programs are administered.
Further discussion on Senate File 2873. Further discussion. Seeing none, Senator Frederickson renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2873 be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed. Motion prevails. Members, we have General Orders number 2. This is House File number 655, and the chair recognizes Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that House File 655 be recommended to pass.
Senator Pappas moves that when this committee do arise, House File 655 be recommended to pass. Senator Pappas, on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an election bill. The rationale for the bill is that by law, legislative candidates need to reside in their districts for 6 months prior to election day, which is prior to the filing period. However, even if a candidate admits that they do not live in the district, it's not possible to remove their name from the ballot without going to court. So this bill requires that all candidates provide their residential address on the affidavit of candidacy and allows the filing officer, upon receipt from a registered voter, to see whether the given address is in the district. If it is not, the filing officer notifies the candidate and removes the candidate's name from the ballot. The candidate would then have the option of going to court to have their name put back on the ballot. Mr. Chairman, that's all there is with the bill, and then I am going to have a couple amendments to the bill, but I'll see if there's any questions, first of all, for the bill.
Further discussion on House File 655. Senator Pappas, to your amendment.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I would offer the A8 amendment.
Senator Pappas offers the A8. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Pappas moves to amend House File 655 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 12th as follows. Page 1, delete lines 22 to 24. Page 2. This is Amendment A-8.
Senator Pappas, to your amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this does add an effective date of May 18th. That's the first day of filing for office, so it would affect this year's filings rather than waiting till the August date. And it also does delete paragraph 3 because local election officials have pointed out that at that point it's too late to remove the candidate's name from the ballot since the absentee ballots are already sent out. So we do not need paragraph 3.
Members, we have before us the A8 amendment. Further discussion on the A8. Further discussion. Seeing none, On the A8 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, then I have the A4 amendment.
Senator Pappas, on the A4 amendment, the Secretary will record the amendment.
Senator Pappas moves to amend House File 655 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 12th as follows. Page 2 after line 4, insert. This is amendment A-4.
Senator Pappas on the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this provision has passed the Senate floor and last year in the House. Also, the House didn't take it up before the end of session, so they got sent back to committee. So we reheard it. But basically what it does is it says that if you are a candidate for political office, you do have the right to campaign in an apartment building, and you do have the right to leave literature. Campaign workers have to accompany the candidate, so the candidate has to be on the presence. This provision, I worked this out with the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, and there's no controversy associated with it.
Further discussion on the A4 amendment. Further discussion. Seeing none, we have before us, members, the A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pappas, anything further on Senator Sieben?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A7 amendment.
Senator Sieben is offering the A7 amendment. The Secretary will record the amendment.
Senator Sieben moves to amend House File 655 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 12th as follows. Page 2 after line 4, insert. This is amendment A-7.
We have the A7 amendment before us. Senator Sieben, on your amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the A7 amendment fixes an oversight in the absentee ballot bill that the governor signed into law a couple of weeks ago. That bill required that voters have witnesses for their absentee ballots, but did not allow for ballots to be rejected if the witness information was missing or incomplete. And so this amendment, the A7 amendment, fixes that oversight, and I believe that there's no opposition to this particular fix. I'd ask for members' support.
Further discussion on the A7. Further discussion. Seeing none, members, we have before us the Sieben A7 amendment. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion on House File 655 as amended. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to offer the A9 amendment.
Senator Sieben is offering the A9. The Secretary will record the amendment.
Senator Sieben now moves to amend House File 655 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 12th as follows. Page 1, line 10. This is amendment A-9.
On the A9, Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and members, the A9 amendment addresses a concern that I have with the particular bill, in that in some cases a candidate may have a compelling reason to keep their home residence address private. And what the amendment would do would allow the candidate, when they're filing for office, to attach a sheet to their filing that lists their home address, so that the filing officer could then, and the filing officer could either be the Secretary of State or your county election official, so that the filing officer could then confirm that you do indeed live in the district, but that residence address could be classified as private data. And members, I think that there is, in some cases, for candidates, and this actually happened to me, where there are instances where we want to keep our actual home address data private. And so I would stand for questions and ask for members' support.
Further discussion on the A9. The chair recognizes Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I rise in support of Senator Sieben's amendment. I, too, have had situations where I have
wished that my home address was private. I do think it's important for our constituents to have verification that we live in the district, and so I'm all for that. But I think for the safety of our candidates and our members, if there's a situation where they deem that it's better to have their home address be private, then I believe this provision allows for that in a responsible manner.
On the A9, Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, members, I rise in opposition to the A9 amendment. I'm not sure, Senator Seidman said that if there's compelling reasons, but I don't see that they're actually spelled out in here what those compelling reasons could be. I think that if somebody's running as a candidate for public office, the public has a right to know, do you actually live in the district that you are running for the office that you're going to be representing? And to have a process by which a candidate can run for office but not tell the voters of that district whether or not you actually live in that district, I think goes against the public disclosure that we expect of our candidates. So I would oppose the A9 amendment.
Senator Seidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response to Senator Betzold's point, I would say that the candidate will need to give their residential address. It will be attached to their filing documents. This just explains that that data can be kept private, so that the filing officer indeed can confirm whether the candidate lives in the district or not, but that home address could remain private. And Senator Betzold, when I first ran, I was a single, rather young woman, and I did have some circumstances where after I moved, I didn't want my home address to be published. My home phone number is published, for instance, but my actual address, obviously a lot of people know where I live, but my home address is not listed. And I think that this offers a good balance where the filing officer will confirm and can confirm, and the public could call and question whether the candidate indeed lives in the district, but that data can be kept private. And so I do think that this is a reasonable alternative to help the public. They can confirm that the candidate lives in the district, but the actual address is not public data.
Senator Betzold, and then Senator Gerlach. Senator Betzold.
And Mr. Chair, I think it's a reality that many people who run for public office do wind up having some people who probably we would like rather not deal with. There are people who have had protests in front of their homes. There have been people, we've all probably thought about the concerns that we have by putting our name on the public. That having been said, though, telling the one person who's the filing officer that you're a resident of the district and not telling the voters that does go against what I think is proper public disclosure. The Senate Judiciary Committee spent some time on this particular issue, and we decided to delete this very provision from the bill because we had some concerns. We felt that the interest of the public in knowing that the candidate actually lives in the district may outweigh other factors. So I oppose the amendment.
Senator Gerlach to the A9 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to rise real quick to clarify. I had a number of conversations with individuals before the bills came up on the floor, and I had mentioned that there would be some PAPUS bills dealing with election issues, and there would also be a CBIT amendment. And that was the one I had been referring to previously was the A7, the one we had passed. And I had a lot of conversations with a lot of individual members that I believe that I was in support of that, and that's the one that dealt with the absentee ballots. I just want to make sure that there's no confusion. Now we are discussing the A9, which I was not aware of. I have no opinion on this particular amendment at this time because I'm listening to the debate. This was clearly a matter that was handled in the Judiciary Committee, and I'm no expert on the data privacy issue, so I just wanted to make sure that those members that I had those conversations with understand that that it was the A7 amendment that I was supportive of, and that the A9 members are going to be certainly deciding based on the debate today.
Further discussion on the A9. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to the concern of the residents having the right to know in no uncertain terms that a candidate lives in the district, I would say that when we give an affidavit and sign under sworn testimony that we do, and we provide that officer with our address that can be confirmed, that there really is no question, and that when we stand up here and say that we would like the opportunity to protect candidates or members, if there is some particular reason, that that ought to be respected. Thank you.
Senator Betzold and then Senator Pappas.
I request a roll call vote, Mr. Chair.
There will be a roll call. Three hands. Seeing three, there will be a roll call. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pappas.
I'll yield to Senator Olson.
Senator Olson, Jen. Well,
Mr. Chair, just leafing through our book, you know, when we get elected, our addresses are very public. Why would we run for office if we're not willing to be that transparent? Yes, there can be some challenges, but to send that message that somehow we don't want people to know where we live doesn't say much for our ability to build any confidence on the part of the people we claim to represent. So I would encourage a no vote on this amendment.
Senator Pappas on the A9.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think this is a rather touchy issue and a difficult decision to make, because certainly we all agree in transparency. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed that the House no longer puts their birth dates in the Green Book, because I want to know when they're born and how old they are. But the addresses are tricky. I mean, I always advise candidates that in all your literature put your phone number so that you're very accessible and the voter knows that they can reach you. But in some circumstances, we really, many of us have had the experience of being stalked. Or once a number of years ago, one of my LA was being overly enthusiastic and helping a constituent who had a gun, who had a beef against Ramsey County, who easily could be angry at any other politician that was around that wasn't being properly sympathetic to his needs. And it's certainly somebody who's determined to find out your address can find it out. But, you know, this makes it a little bit easier for them right away to find your address. I agree that the protection is there with the filing officer to make sure that you live where you live. And certainly, you know, in a public forum, people could ask you where you live. And you could say, you know, I live on the west side on Prospect Boulevard. But I think we do need to be sensitive in this day and age that women in particular, a lot of us have children that we may be concerned about. And if there is a real danger that you are being stalked by someone, this could just be, you know, you don't want to go to get an order of protection. It's not at that level yet, but there is some real fear involved. And I think that's what Senator Sieben is talking about. Probably be rare occasions. And I think, members, we should grant a candidate who's had that negative experience the courtesy of allowing them to keep their address private.
Members, very clear on the issue here, and a roll call has been requested, so stay close to your chair. We're about to vote. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sieben, as I looked at your amendment, I noticed that only the candidate needs to make mention wanting the need to be have their address classified. There's no review board. There's no extenuating circumstances that need to be mentioned here. There's nothing like that. Matter of fact, you may not even have ever been assaulted or threatened in any way. All of us, according to this, all of us who run for office could say, I want my address private. No reason, no cause, no threat, and we can keep the public in the dark on our address. Now, one of the main requirements of a representational government is that you live in the district. And, you know, those of us that are on the, affectionately called the Privacy Committee, that's referred to sometimes as a cult in this body, has to continually balance the interests of the individual versus the interest of the state. Now, you don't have an extenuating circumstance that's referred to in your bill or in your amendment. I can certainly understand the need for it, but I think we need to vet this out a little bit more in committee, in the Data Privacy Committee, as well as Judiciary and certainly Election Committee. I'm just concerned that the public is left in the dark. And, you know, in light of the threat that sometimes occurs in the life of someone in public, if you've ever looked into searching out the details on an individual nowadays with all of the information and the data harvesting processes, for $9 you can find through the internet more information that you would ever want to know about an individual. And there's more than one source on an election ballot or an election committee registration form that has your address on it. I don't think we're going to plug any holes of the candidate's address by this amendment. There's just so many different ways. This is going to leave us the security of like a screen door. It's just not going to give the protection. But what it does do is it prevents the public from knowing a little bit more about someone running for public office. And I'm just fearful that that is the end result. Maybe not the intention of this amendment, but it would be the end result. So I agree with Senator Betzold on his concern regarding this proposal.
On the A9, further discussion, Senator Pappas.
Members, I just want to make it clear that current law does not require you to list your address. Current law does not require it. My bill is requiring it because we had a situation where one of our colleagues had an opponent who did not live in the district, and they had to go to court to get his name off the ballot. So if the bill goes down altogether, it's defeated or it's vetoed, then current law means you don't have to list your address. What Senator Sieben is doing, my bill is saying you have to list your address. What Senator Sieben is saying, you have to list your address unless there are certain circumstances where you think it would be a problem, and then you have to go and make your case to the filing officer and have that left as private data. So I don't know how you want to vote on this, but it does seem like we do want this bill, which requires you to list your address, but then I think we also should allow a few minor exceptions.
I think we're getting ready. A further discussion on the A9. Roll call has been requested. Further discussion? Secretary will take the roll on the A9 amendment. Members, we are on the A9 Sieben Amendment. All members wishing to vote on the A9. Secretary will close the roll. 24 ayes, 37 nays. The amendment does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 655 as amended. Further discussion. Seeing none, Senator Pappas renews her motion that when this committee do arise, that House File 655 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The chair appoints Senator Betzel to the chair.
The next bill is number 14 on general orders, House file number 653, Senator Pappas.
Is this a House file or a Senate file? Mr. Chairman, House. I move that when this committee do arise, House file 653 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill requires cities that use a ward system to elect their city council to redistrict their ward boundaries no later than 14 days prior to candidates filing for office. The reason we need this is that some cities have waited several years after the census and state redistricting before adjusting their boundaries, and this will require them to adjust them more promptly in line with what the census indicates. And I've been working a lot with the local cities on this, and there's no opposition.
Is there discussion on House File 653? Discussion. Seeing none, the question occurs on House File 653. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item is number 49 on general orders, Senate File 2737. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2737 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Scogin.
Members, Mr. Chair, what we have before you today is the Agriculture and Veterans Policy Omnibus Bill, and it is not as heavy as it has been in previous years, but there are certainly some important pieces to both the Ag Bill and the Veterans Bill that you have before you. And if you'll bear with me, I would like to walk you through some sections of this bill, including sections 1 and 2, which was brought to us by Senator Stump. This is compensation for livestock destroyed by the gray wolf. It also opens up the door for investigation. County sheriffs and extension agents are allowed to come in and help with the investigation, and especially in some areas of very rural Minnesota where some of the DNR officers are not always readily available. Section 3 permits the permit efficiency goal report. The Commissioner of Agriculture does have a goal now to try to get permits issued within 150 days of application. Commissioner will be trying to attain that goal, as well as providing us with semiannual reports on their progress. This was a shied provision from Senate File 2761. Senator Koch brought us Section 4. This is classifying horses as livestock, and was recommended to pass by our committee. In Sections 5, 6, 7, 8, and 10, we made some changes to the pesticide and food handlers laws, the rules and regulations for application, and the penalties for those who get their applications in late. Also in Section 9, this is a tree care registration piece that I brought forth by the Department of Agriculture. It was modified by committee. It is strictly a registration. The department would like to know how many tree cutters and disposers we have out there, and this is a registration piece. Bovine tuberculosis was examined in Sections 11 and 12. This gives the Board of Animal Health some latitude. Senator Dill brought us that bill this year. Section 13, Saltzman provision that allows municipals to participate in extension work, including 4-H, and we'll see that bill, I think, a little bit later as well today. Section 14 and 15, this is enforcement of the bulk firewood sales. This came to the committee, and through the Department of Agriculture, a piece that I carried allows for harvest location and delivery tickets to be on wood that has moved over so many miles from its originating source. In Section 18, this opens the door to some nonprofit farmings, sets some standards for how large these farms can be and what their profits need to be returned to the farm. And Senator Dill brought us that provision. Sections 19, 20, and 21 are the temporary livestock production input lien. Chairman Vickerman brought us this provision today. And this is when a farmer unfortunately gets into a mediation situation where they can no longer pay their bills and there are livestock on the farm. We want the feed company to keep bringing feed during the 45 days that they are going through mediation so that we don't make a bad situation worse by starving cattle. Feed companies were willing but a little anxious about who was going to pay the bill if the farmer didn't get out of trouble. So this allows the feed company to get in line on the foreclosure and on the mediation to get paid for that feed after they helped the keep the cattle alive until they reached their market weight or were able to be sold off. Section 23 is a fertilizer research grant. This is not new appropriations, members. This is just they asked if they could extend the amount of time to use that money. And this is a provision to allow them a little more latitude on when they actually use the money that was already appropriated to them. Section 24, I think, the dairy research and education facility is a piece that the Commissioner of Agriculture will work with both MinSCU and the University of Minnesota on doing consideration at least of putting together a partnership for developing a dairy research and education facility, and they do have to get back to us with a report on that. In Section 25, you'll find the terminal capacity study. This is a Senator Rosen provision. We are trying to determine if the state of Minnesota is prepared to make our crops going forward up to 2020. We need to know how much propane and anhydrous ammonia we have available to not only create our crops but to dry them down and process them. Senator Rosen's bill would ask us to do a complete and extensive study of that, even up to 100 miles on the other side of our borders, to make sure that we have enough product available to give the farmers a chance to get their work done. In the ag bill, you'll see two repealers. The first one is the native grasses and wildflower seed production loan repealer. The department tells us that this has never been used, so we just decided to take it out of statute. The other one is a Senator Dill repealer, the requiring blankets on clipped animals. Senator Dill, as you know, is wrapping up his career here in the state Senate and on the Ag Committee. And he just felt that there was a law in place that if you clipped your animals, sheep for the most part, before a certain date, you were required by law to put a blanket on them before sending them back outside. And ladies and gentlemen, members, Senator Dill asked us to repeal that particular law and take a lot of sheep herders off, well, from looking over their shoulder, wondering if law enforcement was watching them or not. So we did that for him. Then we moved to Article 2, which is your veterans portion. We did a lot of work in the Veterans Committee the last 2 years. This year, a little less work, but certainly equally as important. Senator Erickson Ropes is sections 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, and 10. This was work on the county veteran service officers and the ability to also offer training and support to assistant county veteran service officers. In section 7, a higher education benefit for families and spouses who have lost a loved one as a direct result of combat or as a direct result of injuries from combat. And there are some provisions in there to give them an education stipend as well as to offer some higher education for their loved ones. And the cost on that, I tried to get a fiscal note on that one a couple different times, and I have been told by the administration as well as by our fiscal analysts that the cost on this is not significant. It is a very important provision because we support veterans so much in this state. We also sometimes forget about the people that the veterans leave at home, and they are affected by some of this, and this is a very important piece for those who are left at home waiting for their veterans to come home, and Senator Bonhoff brought us that provision, and it was well received by the committee. Two repealers in the veterans bill as well, members. The first one is the Disabled American Veteran License Plate. This is an opportunity for disabled American veterans to buy a license plate to show that. What Senator Ingebretson found was that no one is using that provision, and there are so many other license plates that fall into categories that affect veterans, so we have repealed that one. And the second one was brought to us by the Department of Veterans Affairs. That was to a construction project priority listing, and the repeal actually removes Wilmer from the project priority list on future veterans' homes. Members, I also want to, this is the omnibus bill, and I know that sometimes chairs, and I'm not the chair of that committee, I was asked by our chair, Senator Vickerman, to help present this bill today, and I do it gladly, but I know often the chairs will take a little latitude and thank those who help put these bigger bills together, and we certainly have a wonderful staff that helps us, Tim Michaels, Sandy Brown, Greg Knopf, Dan Mueller, and Tom Bodern, answer all of our questions, get this stuff put in good shape for us. And then, members, if I could just have a moment, because on our Ag and Veteran Affairs Committee, I want to point out that this is the final bill that three great Minnesotans have put together. These three have done farmers, ranchers, veterans, and their families a great service. And so, committee, I would just like you to recognize and help me thank ranking Republican member Senator Steve Dill, Senator Steve Murphy, and, of course, our chair, Senator Jim Vickerman, for their effort and for their leadership in ag and in veterans affairs. Combined, they have given this state 66 years of service, and it has been outstanding service. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will stand for questions.
Are there any questions on Senate File 2737? Any discussion? Seeing none, the question occurs on Senator Skolga's motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 2737 be recommended to pass on that motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item before us is number 67 on General Orders, Senate File number 445, Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 445 be recommended to be passed.
On that motion, Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and members, back in 1909, the countries of the United States and Canada had a treaty, and that treaty regulated the waters, the boundary waters between the United States and Canada. At that time, they also formed a International Joint Commission, and that International Joint Commission really has responsibility for the regulation of those waters, at least in the area of how high they should be and also what the other countries do with it. The only thing is that it did leave out the area at that time they weren't necessarily concerned about the quality of those waters. So what the organization, the Lake of the Woods Organization Foundation, the Water Sustainability Foundation, has put together this resolution, and the Joint Commission actually requests resolutions from countries and for changes. And so this resolution requests that the Joint Commission look at the quality of the water in those boundaries, in particular Lake of the Woods. And so the provinces of Manitoba and Ontario and now Minnesota would like to pass this resolution requesting that the Joint Commission take a look at the quality of the water in Lake of the Woods, and that's what this resolution does. The counties surrounding Lake of the Woods, Roseau, Kuchiching, and Lake of the Woods County, have passed resolutions as well. So that's what this resolution does, and ask for your support.
Is there discussion on Senate File 445? Discussion. Seeing none, Senator Stumpf renews his motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 445 be recommended to pass on that motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item before us is number 51 on General Orders, Senate File number 2941, Senator Saltzman.
There. On this bill, Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File number 2941 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Saltzman.
There, thank you much. On this bill, Mr. Chair, this bill was included in Senator Scogin's bill, and it has to do with 4-H programs. In Washington County last year, after the unallotment, the county board decided to cut funding for 4-H programs. This creates quite a predicament because without staff on the county level, the 4-H programs are unable to access the extension programs that we know are so very valuable. As a result of that, the youth and families did extensive fundraising. The county did eventually put some additional dollars in, but they are continuing to fundraise. And what they found was that a number of cities who had expressed support for 4-H were willing to make contributions to the program, which were voluntary, but state law prohibits that. And so this bill, which has been whittled down from its original language, provides for cities to be able to provide funds for 4-H extension programs. It is completely voluntary. It's think that we have to do some long-term discussions of how we fund 4-H, given the fact that counties will be having to use funds to, you know, fund 4-H or perhaps child care protection workers. And so this is an important program for our state, and I would appreciate your support.
There's a discussion on Senate File 2941. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Senator Saltzman, I appreciate the work you've done with regard to 4-H and 4-H funding. But I just want to talk to the a little bit about the importance of 4-H. You know, Minnesota has a state fair, and it's the great Minnesota get-together, and we're all proud of the state fair that we have and the ability of Minnesota to attend the state fair and look at all the great exhibits that are there. And where those exhibits come from is they come from the county fairs, and they come from the 4-H projects that all of the young people, a lot of the young people, do across the state. And so if we are not able to maintain a strong 4-H program, you know, not only is it a negative to the kids and the young people that participate in it, but it's going to impact our great Minnesota get-together. And, you know, we've got a small step here so that cities can contribute some funding to 4-H, but in the broader scheme of things, members, we're going to have to take a look at what's going on, because it's going to impact not only 4-H, but also our county fairs and our state fair. So I would ask for your support in Senator Saltzman's effort here, but I would hope that in the long run we're able to take a little bigger and broader view of funding for 4-H.
Further discussion on Senate File 2941. Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair, would Senator Saltzman yield?
She will yield.
Senator Saltzman, have you gotten an attorney general's opinion on opening this Pandora's box? Because I recall specifically when I would sit on the city council in Waseca and folks would come in and request taxpayer dollars, that we were so very, very cautious on how we laid those taxpayer dollars, because you can get into a very gray area. And I can recall numerous times having to get an opinion on whether or not we could support the fireworks fund, whether or not we could support any private entity out there or organization, and had to get rulings on whether or not it was to the benefit of the whole, of which I believe we should be using our taxpayer dollars. And so I'm concerned, and I know your past bill, when we had that at committee, I was concerned of the mere sake that if we open this box, and, you know, God love 4-H. I grew up on a farm, and I know all about 4-H. But should we not be then authorizing or giving the opportunity of our communities to fund the marching classic band, to fund the football team who has just lost their help through the schools because of the economy? Should we not be funding these other organizations or giving our communities the opportunity to fund these organizations? And so back to my original question, has the Attorney General weighed in on whether or not this is legal for taxpayers' dollars to be used in this way?
Sarah Saltzman.
On that question, Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, I have not asked for an opinion on this. I do want to note the language in the bill that it is to spend money for county extension work. I also want to note that the Minnesota 4-H has an $11 million budget. The state and federal government combined contribute $4.5 million, and county governments contribute $5 million. And there's also additional gifts and grants. And so what makes this program very unique is that it's a program, our extension program, comes from significant taxpayer dollars, which are federal and state dollars, to create these programs. And then there's sort of this gatekeeper where the county has to come up with dollars to provide the staff to access these programs. And I think what's important to remember about 4-H as well is that it typically has been known as cookies and cows has been brought to my attention. But I think Senator Skoy made a very important point that we tend to forget that our state is an agricultural state. We are making significant investments in ensuring that our young people are exposed to STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math. But the future prosperity of our state, even though I live in a suburb, will also depend on the success of our state in recruiting young people to continue in the fields of agriculture, which I'm sure in southern Minnesota is very important. So having programs like this that our state has invested in so that young people can have those experiences to have success is very important. And in some communities, they provide programs and support programs that provide other kind of enrichment for young people. And for some communities that have expressed support for programs like this, it may be more appropriate for them to support a program that is offered through 4-H. So it's giving them some local control, and I think it is rather unique in that it is a program that is funded with state and federal dollars. As Senator Skoy has said, I think long-term we do need to look at some other funding models. This is an attempt to stabilize the program in the coming year as we have those further discussions.
Sarah Perry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Salzman, to continue here, maybe you're missing my point. What I'm concerned about is what will this open up as far as communities donating to other causes? And I think, I'm just concerned that we've looked at the gray area that puts all of our communities and counties in when other organizations come and say, well, hey, you're donating to or providing more funds for 4-H. Why not us? I think maybe hopefully you're following where I'm coming from on this area, because we're all asking in our local communities and counties whether use of taxpayer dollars is right or wrong, and I just don't want our communities to get into a problem.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, as a former state 4-H officer, I just want to make a clarification that, as Senator Salzman said, 4-H is not all cows and cooking. And we want to emphasize that the biggest and fastest growing projects today are aerospace, robotics, photography. And one of the most important things that 4-H does is to develop youth leadership. And so I think that's really what we're talking about. And I just wanted to make sure that even though the focus of 4-H has been a great deal on agricultural and home economics, it is very much expanded from that, and it is not just for farm kids, it is for urban children as well.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 2941? Seeing none, the question occurs on Senator Salzman's motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2941 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller, that completes the general orders list.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now rise and report.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The Senate will come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the secretary, be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller. Remaining on the order of motions and resolutions, Senator Anderson, do you have a motion?
I do, Mr. President. And by way of explanation, I already had moved a conference committee be appointed on one of my bills of 3 members, and I'd like to reconsider that motion and make it a conference committee of 5 members, because it seems that there's more people that need to participate in this. So having voted on the prevailing side, I move that the vote whereby my motion to not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate file 2519 adopted April 15, 2010 be now reconsidered.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, then I'd like to withdraw that previous motion.
Go ahead. You have another motion, Meg?
I do. And then I would move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate file 2519 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Other motions? Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move that Senate file 2774 be withdrawn from the Committee of Finance and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And I've talked with Senator Cohn and the author of the bill, Senator Kolk, and it's more appropriate the bill be heard in the Tax Committee.
Senator Bach, could you hold off on that motion for a moment? The bill is not at the desk, so it's going to be brought up from the Finance Committee. And so why don't you just withdraw your motion, and then you can do it again in a minute or two. So.
I'll withdraw my motion, Mr. President.
Other motions?
Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to move a brief recess for the purposes of appointing conference committees.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate is in recess.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the
there
desk?
There is a privilege report at the desk. The Secretary will read the privilege report.
Senator Pogamiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 3128, Senators Kielash, Gerlach, and Carlson. On Senate File 2935, Senators Lori, Moi, and Dill. On Senate File 2437, Senators Moi, Limmer, and Olson M. And on Senate File 2519, Senators Anderson, Dahl, Kevin, Sieben, Fredrickson, and Dibble. Senator Pogamiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 2774 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
And you are the author of this bill, Senator Bach?
No, Senator Kolk is. I've spoke with her, and I've spoke with Senator Cohn, where it resides in the Finance Committee, and we have agreement that the bill should be heard in the Tax Committee first.
Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Okay. Senator Pogamiller, that completes the work at the desk. Senator Clark.
Mr. President, point of personal privilege.
State your point of personal privilege.
Mr. President and members, as you're aware, the Early Childhood Caucus, in conjunction with key early care and education organizations, are honoring our young children and all those who make a difference in children's lives today as part of National Week of the Young Child. In honor of this week, Senators Bonhoff, Michelle, Roebling, Stumpf, and I introduced a resolution calling attention to our youngest learners. High-quality early education programs benefit all children, especially children who may be at risk for poor educational attainment. Research reveals that a major aspect of educational achievement gap can be traced to the period prior to children entering kindergarten. Quality early education is a key in addressing the achievement gap. All kids deserve to grow up in safe and nurturing environments, and parents deserve to have choices that meet their families' needs. We were working to improve the educational outcomes of children from birth to kindergarten, and we are committed to working with early childhood care providers, with parents, with School Readiness Funders Coalition, communities, and others to ensure quality and affordable early care is available for all Minnesota's children. Thank you.
Announcements of Senate interest. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I rise on a point of personal privilege.
State your point of personal privilege.
Mr. President, I feel compelled to make a comment about part of our debate on Tuesday, 2 days ago, on the bill relating to the LCCMR. I know that in the heat of debate, we can all say things we might regret, and I have certainly been guilty of that on occasion. However, there are some things that I believe go beyond emotion and opinion and rise to the level of inaccurate and inappropriate statements in violation of both Senate rules and of our public responsibility as elected officials. On Tuesday on the Senate floor, some statements were made about Will Steger and the Will Steger Foundation, which are inaccurate and need to be corrected. Statements were made that Will Steger is not a qualified teacher, that the Will Steger Foundation is partisan, and that the Will Steger Foundation has continuing support from taxpayers, that it's 13% of their budget, and that those dollars were used to send a legislator to the Copenhagen Climate Change Conference. All three of those statements are false and tend to injure the reputation of a distinguished Minnesotan. Mr. Steger has science and education degrees from the University of St. Thomas, as well as a number of honorary degrees, and has a 40-some year career as a science educator. The Will Steger Foundation is scrupulously nonpartisan, and the Will Steger Foundation has received in its history one government grant ever, and it was not used for the purpose mentioned. Mr. President, we are all entitled to our opinions, but not to our own facts. I would like the record to reflect the truth, and I request that my Senate colleagues join me in correcting the record as well.
Other announcements of Senate interest. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, the Senate Tax Committee will reconvene at 2 p.m.
Senator Pappas.
Room 15, Mr. President.
Mr. President, I just wanted to remind members that the deadline to reserve your tickets for the tour of the Dead Sea Scrolls is tomorrow. Space is limited, and I hope that you will join the St. Paul delegation in this amazing viewing this amazing exhibit.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just, Senator Bach mentioned a few moments ago that the Tax Committee is meeting. I do not serve on the Tax Committee, but I'm wondering if Senator Bach would be so kind as to respond. There's been newspaper reports about a bill being progressed or making progress in the Senate about Viking Stadium. I'm wondering if that is going to be the topic of his committee, and if not, if there's going to be a bill being brought forward in his committee that those of us who are interested could be there to see it.
Senator Bach.
Mr. President, Senator Hahn, the Tax Committee, when we met at 8:30 this morning, had an agenda of 14 bills. We got through 11 of them. We have three left to do today. So the intent of the Tax Committee hearing this afternoon is to conclude the morning's agenda.
Other announcements of Senate interest. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. President. We all know today is April 15th as Tax Day, and it's often said that the only things that are certain in life are death and taxes, but we have a group of people here today, some of whom were in the gallery before, and who have also been down in the rotunda and are now in the Great Hall. They're here to remind us that what is certain really is saving lives and taxes. A new way to look at that. Joining us down there are the transplant recipients, their family members, and then the family members of people who have donated organs and tissue. Today, Secretary of State Mark Ritchie shared his story of his family's donation of his only child's organs and tissue about 10 years ago. It was very moving. They've come here to thank us for our advocacy and our historic support of donation. So if you would care to learn more, stop down at the Great Hall. You'll learn that Minnesota has a 55% participation rate in the donor checkoff. 55% of the people who have driver's license in Minnesota check off. We've got about 45% to go, so there's more to do, but thank you.
Other announcements of Senate interest. Without objection, the following members will be excused from portions of today's session. Senator Latz all day, Senator Murphy all day, Senator Bach from 11 a.m. to 11:55, Senator Foley from 11:50 to 12 noon, Senator Olson M. from 11:50 to 12:05, and from 1:20 till the end. Senator Sharon from 12:30 to 12:50, Senator Kielash from 12:30 to the end, Senator Clark from 12:50 to 1 o'clock, Senator Hand from 12:45 to 12:55, Senator Frederickson from 1 o'clock until the end, Senator Cohen from 1:05 until the end. Any other announcements of Senate interest? Seeing none, Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, members, the Rules Committee will meet at 2 o'clock. So those of you who are in Senator Bach's committee who are on Rules, if you could swing by Rules and help us get a quorum, that would be helpful. Members, for purposes of planning, we will come back Monday, April 19th at 11 a.m. We will, Senator Senjum, apparently the grand negotiation is over, and the plan for the next 2 weeks is to have session on Wednesday, next Wednesday, and then not another floor session until the following Monday. And then likewise that week, that week, a floor session on Wednesday and no floor session on Thursday or Friday. So the executive helped us make this decision, the House, the Senate, my mother, and I didn't realize things were this complex. But we will be here working very diligently on all kinds of items. I will personally be working on Thursday and Friday, so I hope you all are able to work on those days also. All we're not going to do is have floor sessions on Thursday and Friday. And I know Senator Berglund's group is going to be working. I know Senator Stumpf's group on Race to the Top is going to be working. They may be working Saturday and Sunday also. So the only thing that is changing is that we're not going to have a floor session on Thursday of either week. Otherwise, it's as if we were sitting here working diligently in our committees. Sir Senjum, do you think I covered it well enough there? Okay, I move the Senate adjourn till Monday, April 19th, 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned until Monday, May 19th at 11 a.m.